Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio, talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show. 77 WABC.
Pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and gay. And I pity any girl who's in me today. I feel charming.
Curtis, are you bringing us in this afternoon with this, is this shade? Is this Curtis Sliwa shade that you're throwing?
No, actually, it's in relationship as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us to conduct this broadcast to everyone out there by NJDiet.com. It's really the song from The King and I. Make that West Side Story.
Yes, yes. Yes, Maria, Maria. I actually am a big musical theater buff, so yes, I'm a fan. I love the song, but knowing you and the way you operate, it's never as shiny and clean as it looks on the outside.
I mean, that was my favorite part of West Side Story. It was the battle between the Sharks and the Jets. Enough of that femme fatale stuff. But we play this in honor of you, Ebony Kardashian Williams, because it's a full spread in today's New York Post. I missed it because I was too busy reading about Odell Beckham, whether his knee had been broken or not.
Which we'll get to.
Yeah, we'll get to that later on. But I see here in advance of the sports page that they have a three page spread. I was looking for the foldout to see what kind of a spread it would be of you. But apparently it was not at that penthouse.
Calm down. Calm down.
You know, the old Playboy and such.
Yeah, no, this is actually a real, it's like, that's the Playboy joke, whereas you get it for the interview. There's an actual real interview here in this Post interview. No, I want to applaud the Post and the writer here, Kirsten Fleming. They did a fantastic job. I spoke with Kirsten about 2 weeks ago for well over an hour. And from that, she was able to garner, I think, so far at least, the best publication, the best piece that's been written to capture why I wrote Pretty Powerful. Because, look, let's be honest, the title, it's a bit provocative. People like, you're pretty powerful. What kind of like superficial book is that? It's actually the opposite. This is a book about reclaiming the power of femininity, the power of a bossed-up, intentional woman. And when we put our mind to it, Curtis Sliwa, and you probably know this better than most because you've had 4 to 5 wives, really there's nothing a powerful woman can't do. And that's really what this book is about. And this piece in the New York Post today touches on a little bit of my backstory, my personal narrative, my time as a young attorney, transitioning into the broadcasting career, and how being intentional around what I look like every step of the way was not a detriment. It was something I used to be conflicted around, play it down, dumb it down, don't bring any attention to it. I wouldn't want them to not take me seriously. It's the opposite. You actually double down on your strength and power as a woman when you be intentional around your presentation and your appearance. I mean, look at you. You're pretty powerful. You're very intentional with your look, Curtis Sliwa. You wear this beautiful red track jacket, as Kat Timpf calls it, and this fantastic scarlet beret as a very intentional statement of your purpose in New York City.
First off, it's not a track jacket and it's not a scarlet beret, so don't sully my reputation here.
Look at you, so sensitive.
First off, baby does not have back. This proves my contention about
what are you talking
you.
About? There's no even pictures of the back.
Well, there's a
not.
Spread here.
Well,
you can
everything's
open up
front,
the spread and see
everything's
for yourself.
Front. Everything's coming from the front.
Yeah, because you don't want to show your back. Because if you
this
show
is
your
not,
back,
because this is not penthouse. This is not
rear.
Prostitute.
A real flat
honey,
rear.
it's not silicone injected, if that's what you mean. But
you
it's a nice, muscular.
You may have to go
muscular.
Down to Brazil. You may really have to go down to Brazil for some injections.
So I talk about surgery in the book, and if that's your get down, ladies, no judgment. But I like to keep it all natural.
Now, Now, as it is up on Facebook right now, the Curtis and Ebony Facebook page. You can go see it there, or you can just go online and read it from the New York Post, or get it in hard copy form. Most of our Gavones there, whose tongues are hanging down to their ankles, are probably doing such because there is a whole legion of men out there who are dedicated every day to going online and looking at you at WABCradio.com/live. That's WABCradio.com/live. They are intent on eyeballing you as they can also listen to you. It doesn't preclude women from doing this.
Sure.
But a high propensity of men tend to do this. And as I scan through this, as I speed read through this, I see mentions here of Meghan McCain, Monica Crowley, Marcia Clark. Everyone you've mentioned here before, you go on and on. And not a mention about Curtis Lee and WABC.
Well, Curtis, I just gave you a pretty power shout out. I told you how pretty and powerful you are in your red. And what else do you want from me?
Well, no. Why don't you just say
to they're in the book. Those women are actually in the, if you look in the table
that,
of contents.
Why don't you lie to me and just say, oh, the New York Post must have edited it out.
Okay, that's exactly right.
I spent
right.
at least a paragraph yeah. or yeah. more talking yeah. About how great it is to be here 3 hours a day, Monday through Fridays, 12 to 3, and then obviously 5 days a week, a total of 15 hours. Not even a mention.
That is true.
Not even a thumbnail sketch.
I talked at length about that. I don't know why Kirsten Fleming edited that out. Just kidding, Kirsten.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if it, next book, when I do the Pretty Powerful Male Edition,
please.
You will be my first interview because you have that diva clause in your deal where you don't allow other people to wear red in studio with
you. Yes, that's right. No red beret, no red sateen jacket, and no red apparel whatsoever. Although, I must tell you, with your book coming out now, and how can people get this book?
They can absolutely go to Amazon.com, go to BarnesandNobles.com. I know you love it. And on pre-order it, I'll tell you a secret. If you order it now, it's a lot cheaper than when it comes out September 12th. But it comes out on the shelves, hard copy.
So
I'll have a signing here. You're going to be at my signing, Curtis Lee.
Yeah, management told me I had to.
You have to, mandatory. You know, we go together. September 14th, Thursday, on the Upper East Side, Barnes & Noble.
You know, what's so interesting here is that you're shilling a book and you're already talking about doing a second book.
The guy I can interview you.
The guy who follows us, Michael Savage, his show is one big infomercial about this book, that book, my dog, my foot, my war with Trump, you know, every other book. And he's continuing to write books. And then the guy who follows me in the drive home at 5, Mark Levin, he's talking about his book. Is that, you know, we ought to charge you all, people. You know, that's how we can make money at this station, is charge you for infomercials for all
thing.
The books that the three of you sell here.
I know. How about you do a live read for me, Sleeper? You do those exceptionally well. You're the best in the business. How about a pretty powerful live read from Curtis Sleeper?
In fact, that's why the independent candidate Bo Dito said he wanted management to force me to do over my dead body. Because if you notice, the candidate that I have backed as the Reform Party chairman in New York State has qualified for a one-on-one debate tomorrow night with Comrade Bill de Blasio.
I'm going to watch that. I can't wait.
And a second debate. Now, in the beginning, before we came on board, before we supported the Democrat, Sal Albanese, in this mayoral campaign, he's primarying Bill de Blasio.
Glad somebody is.
A lot of people said, why would you back him? Because I said, because he's most in line with the philosophy of the Reform Party. Mm-hmm. Which is term limits, nonpartisan elections. You shouldn't know the party affiliation of the person. You should be electing the best man or woman for the job and initiative and referendum so that people can vote. He was most in league. People said, oh, nobody knows him. He can't raise any money. You're wasting your time. Really?
Mm-mm.
Did we waste our time, ladies and gentlemen? The answer is you actually have a candidate who's going to take Bill de Blasio on a one-on-one debate who happens to be a Democrat, liberal, progressive himself. So de Blasio can't turn to Sal Albanese tomorrow and say, oh, you're a Trump supporter. In fact, he's not a Trump supporter. He voted for Bernie the Altacaca Sanders. So you see, you get de Blasio from the left, and then in the general election, you get him from the right, and you just start chopping him down. Because he's like a redwood tree anyway, Big Bird. You just start chopping him down from both. So I'm proud to say that we were a part of that tsunami of support for Sal Albanese that has earned him a shot into the Democratic primary debate, pre-primary debate tomorrow, and another to follow in September. But the big issue that has come up, and I predicted this.
Yes, you did.
I said right on the show. Would,
yes, you did.
That there would be a movement to take down the Christopher Columbus statue at 59th Street Columbus Circle, which has been there for decades. There's a move in Barcelona, which just suffered that terrorist attack, likewise, to remove their Christopher Columbus statue, which is at the epicenter, for any of you who have ever visited Barcelona like I have, at the epicenter of the city.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
And so the speaker of the city council, Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, has decided that this Christopher Columbus statue must go.
There obviously has been very much an ongoing dialogue and debate in the Caribbean, particularly in Puerto Rico, where I'm from, about this same conversation, that there should be no monument or statue of Christopher Columbus based on what he means or what he signifies.
Now, the goal of this woman, who was the patron, who was the Medici of Oscar Lopez Rivera, the terrorist of the FALN, who marched and was honored in the annual Puerto Rican Day Parade, and that caused a lot of mishigash.
That you did not go to for the first time in how many years?
Well, I went, but I did not participate in the parade route. I just scanned it. I went, walked up and down and side because I wanted to see who participated, who didn't. Mm. But it was interesting because her next move will be to try to put a statue of Oscar Lopez Rivera in the spot in which he hopes to take the demolition ball to the statue of Christopher Columbus at 59th Street. And who can forget what the president said? Where does this stop? Does this stop with just Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson?
This week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
So the president in this case was spot on. And he failed to mention Christopher Columbus. And there were a whole host of others that you can mention in league with that. Ladies and gentlemen, there's going to be a move to take the wrecking ball to Christopher Columbus statue there at 59th Street Columbus Circle. It's just one of many to come down the pipe. Unexpectedly, because obviously we're not talking the Confederacy here. We're talking about the guy who sailed west in order to go east and is given the honor of having discovered the Americas from Europe. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's quickly go to John, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Johnny?
Hi, it's Ebony. I'd like to get a little bit of history here. If Columbus came over and discovered America, why is everybody in Central America and South America speaking Spanish? Wouldn't they be speaking Italian? Because there is indigenous tribes in South America that have their own language, and that was changed to Spanish.
Well, remember, it was Queen Isabella and Ferdinand who funded his trip west. It was not the Italians. They had passed on Christopher Columbus. They thought he was too loony-kazoony. He couldn't get any Medici's there. Mm. And clearly, he was brought back to Spain to face charges and put in the gulag in chains and shackles.
I got to tell you, I told you yesterday, Chris, I'll say it again. I'm not one for getting off and putting a lot of energy into tearing down all these statues and monuments, even if they are Confederate people, even if they're Grand Dragons of the KKK. I don't like walking past them, but it is what it is. I am a fan of more statues. And I would like to point out that West Point, who also has up Robert E. Lee and several other controversial, I suppose, figures, unveiled this past weekend the very first monument of a black person on their campus. My good friend, it was actually his great-grandfather, is Davis Barracks, and that was a ribbon-cutting ceremony where now there is a statue of a black man on the campus of West Point. So again, instead of tearing down our very real history, these people existed, there were monuments put up for them, let's build more that reflect the true diversity and nature of our great, yet troubled, but great American story.
You know, my father, Chester, would not allow me to go to West Point to visit for many years because at the entrance there is a statue to General MacArthur. Mm. And it was General MacArthur who was sent by President Hoover to remove the troops who had marched all the way to Washington after World War I because they had been promised a bonus, were denied it by President Hoover. And then MacArthur and the troops actually uprooted them and moved them out, burnt them out of their tents. Mm. One of those soldiers who had fought in World War One, who had marched all the way from Chicago to get his bonus, was my grandfather, Anton. And so in the Sliwa household, if you mentioned General MacArthur, we'd have taken a wrecking ball to any statue that had been put up to General MacArthur. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the Morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
It's really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
I predicted this. I said, first they come for Robert E. Lee, then they come for Stonewall Jackson, and a whole host of other statues that have been identified since of people that we knew very little, if anything, about their background.
You did call it, and you called it quite accurately, almost to the T.
But I said they'd be coming for Christopher Columbus at 59th Street Columbus Circle, like...
Which means they're going to have to also change the name. You can't just take out the statue.
Of course.
You
think I'd change they'll the name call too. It some kind of a square, yeah. You know.
NYC Square.
No, they'll probably call it Tenio Indian
the
Square.
De Blasio Circle.
Right, De Blasio Circle. Although we have yet to hear Comrade Bill de Blasio weigh in on the statue, his adversary in tomorrow night's Democratic debate and the Reform Party candidate Sal Albanese has said, as a guy who was born in Italy and came here as an immigrant, the statue should stay. And remember, that's coming from a Democrat, liberal, progressive. It'll be interesting to see how everybody else queues up on that, including Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. Watch him try to duck and dive and juke and bob around this one more than Mayweather will with McGregor in the ring come this weekend. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Stan, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Stan?
I really don't care about the statue, but Columbus was a mass murderer, took over a country. I bet you the Indians are happy they pulled the statue off.
Now, first off, the idea of mass murderers and conquistadors back then, it was so massive, Stan, that everyone, whether they were Portuguese, Spanish, whether they were coming from other countries, they did exactly the same thing that Christopher Columbus did.
Got statues from all those people that did that back in the day?
Yeah, but Christopher Columbus was the first to come here to North America, traveling a route that people said was impossible because he would probably fall off the face of the earth.
So we should have a statue of Hitler when he was taking some countries over.
Okay, I tell you what, Stan. You take down Christopher Columbus, and then you start looking at every other statue.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. I understand it's crazy. I really don't care about the statue of Columbus.
Okay.
He's been up there so long.
Let me ask you a question, Stan. Are the pigeons happy?
Everybody's happy.
Of course. They perch right on Christopher Columbus' shoulder. They poop there. You know, they're happy with Christopher Columbus there. But I guarantee you that this Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, who's embraced the terrorism of the FALN, she's their main patron, especially in honoring Oscar Lopez Rivera at the recent Puerto Rican Day Parade, will probably want to replace the Christopher Columbus statue with Oscar Rivera Lopez or any number of other FALN terrorists who were responsible for killing cops, injuring cops, killing civilians, for bombings that took place in this country and on the island of Puerto Rico. So that is what the idea behind this is. Remove Christopher Columbus and replace it with Oscar Lopez Rivera.
Well, listen, this Melissa woman has zero credibility on this issue for the reasons that you point out. You know, you cannot so forcefully and aggressively support someone as she did in the Puerto Rican Day Parade, who was a known terrorist, let's call it what it is, and then be talking about Columbus. You cannot have it both ways.
Exactly. What are you going to do? You had the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa, and the Maria, right?
Was it the Santa and the Maria? I thought that was the Santa Maria.
No, it was actually four ships.
Oh.
And see, the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, Ken Duffy, he didn't even know that. But one of them was devastating in a squall on the way to the Western Hemisphere. So what they did is they just hyperventilated it and created the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. When in fact...
you say hyperventilated, Curtis?
Yes, hyperventilated.
Oh, my Jesus.
In fact, when they left the port in Spain to come west,
you need to go
they
be
started
a teacher.
Out with the Nina, the Pinta,
hilarious.
The Santa, and the Maria. You got to trust me on this. Are you Italian?
No.
You're not
that
even
is not
Sicilian.
A part, that
know,
is not a part of my ancestry DNA.
Exactly. Even with your black skin, you're not even a Chicha Zipa Siciliano. And definitely Ken Duffy. You don't have a drop of Italian
blood. He looks pretty Mediterranean looking to me. What is
Thank
your...
You. I have Bades running through my blood. I know about Christopher Columbus.
Oh,
the
now
Nina,
you're all
the Pinta,
proud.
The Santa,
now you're
and the Maria.
Proud. I thought you weren't
and
a proud
by the way, did
person.
You know that Christopher Columbus was Jewish?
Can we please get some headlines from Ken
it's
Duffy?
True.
I can't
Look it
do
up.
This. I can't do this anymore.
It's not an
please,
urban
Please, headlines from Ken Duffy.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments. The new midday show.
Off the line, the law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
Oh, yeah, baby. Football season. Technically, we're still in preseason, Curtis Sliwa, but you can feel it coming. I got those Hooters hot wings, that cold brewski, and football season right at the tip of the beginning of the season here.
So you Exciting. Weren't watching the presidential address last night. You were watching the Giants versus the Cleveland Browns on Monday Night Football. Is that what you're telling me?
Let me introduce you to a very cool concept. Many of us millennials get into it. Multitasking. So you've got all these different screens. That's the benefit. We know the downside, but now you can have your linear visual television set watching Donald Trump tell us what his plan is for Afghanistan, our president. And then on the small screen on my iPhone here, I can then see what's going on with the football game.
Hmm.
It's amazing, right? It's amazing. So as I'm watching the New York Giants, which is my adopted NFL team, everyone knows, I know it's not popular. I grew up in Charlotte. What can I say? I was there when they expanded into the league. I am a proud Carolina Panthers fan. But I have a fondness for the New York Giants. Hakeem Nicks, who's a person that went to UNC Chapel Hill with me, played here for the Giants for a while. So, you know, I get down with the Giants. So I'm watching the game. They're playing the Cleveland Browns.
We like all... everything else, you're a carpetbagger. You came to New York like these hipsters and millennials. You invaded our city. And now all of a sudden you're claiming the Giants as a
I
team of
the
your
Giants.
Own.
Yes,
even though you've thrown your Charlotte Panthers under the bus.
No. It's number one and number two.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, we're
one, you're one of those kind of fans.
Yeah. Number one, number two. Okay, so I'm watching the game, and it was circulated widely on the internet, this Monday night preseason game, that now this is this growing. We talked about it a bit on the show yesterday, my call for empathy for players who weren't necessarily black, many white or Hispanic players, to join in alliance, not with the substance of the protest, but just say, you know what, I might not understand your struggle, but I feel you. So anyways, yesterday, Curtis, it's circling the internet. It's going pretty viral, these photos of 12 Cleveland Brown players taking a knee. And what made it so remarkable, not just the number of 12 NFL players taking a knee in this protest during the national anthem, protesting for social justice and what they feel are wrongdoings to people of color in this country. A white person actually took a knee. Now, let's paint the context. I want to play two cuts here for our audience. We had Derek Carr, who talked very specifically Chris Long, who talked very specifically about him supporting his brothers in the field, on the football field, let me be clear there, but never wanting to take a knee.
It was a hard week for everybody. I think it's not just a hard week for somebody being from Charlottesville. It was a tough week for America. Really, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, you need white athletes to get involved in the anthem protest. I've said before I'll never kneel for an anthem because the flag means something different to everybody in this country.
Okay. I respect that, Chris Long. You don't have to kneel. But apparently, Seth Devolve, who plays for the Cleveland Browns, tight end, did feel the need to take a knee, and this is what he said as to his reasons why.
The United States is the greatest country in the world, and it is because it provides opportunities to its citizens that no other country does. The issue is that it doesn't provide equal opportunity to everybody. And I wanted to support my African-American teammates today who wanted to take a knee. We wanted to draw attention to the fact that there's things in this country that still need to change. And I myself will be raising children that don't look like me, and I want to do my part as well to do everything I can to raise them in a better environment than we have right now. So I wanted to take the opportunity with my teammates to during the anthem to pray for our country and also to draw attention to the fact that we have work to do.
So see, he's doing multiple things. He's multitasking. He is taking the knee in solidarity with his teammates as this protest around social justice. But he's praying. He's praying to God. He's thanking and acknowledging that the United States is the best country in the world, similar to James Baldwin, who says the U.S. is the best country in the world. That is why I so reserve the right to mercifully criticize her. That is a patriotic thing to do. But in this moment, Curtis, he's also talking about his children. And I think you could hear the breathiness in his statement, the heaviness in tone. And he almost seems overcome with emotion as he's describing his reasons for taking this stance. He's got a black wife. And I know you've had a black wife a time or two, I believe, just one, right?
Yeah, that was a mistake,
one lucky,
like all my other wives.
One lucky Mrs.
Didn't matter, Lima. Black or white, they were all mistakes.
Okay, well, he's got a black wife currently. Obviously, his children will be biracial, probably at least look somewhat of color. He's acknowledging their experience in this country will likely be different than his. Your take on that, as someone who married a black woman at some point in your life, did you have any thought or angst? Let's be honest here and say, you know what? I mean, I like you. I love you. You're cool. But I don't know if I want to do the heavy lifting of raising what could be perceived as black children in America. Did that cross your mind?
Nah, because it was a real short relationship, lasted a year until she discovered Jacoby. I discovered Myers. We had no assets. There were no children, thankfully.
Oh,
so there was no dispute beyond that.
But you ever think about that, though? I mean, in all sincerity, because a lot of people talk about interracial relationships being okay, theoretically. I think we're at like an 80% approval nationwide. But then I'll tell you, because I've also been in an interracial marriage. And it was something I thought about, like, my kids are going to look probably more like me than the husband. I wonder if this white man is prepared to raise brown children in this country.
If I had had a child, sure, I would have been prepared to raise those children, biracial children. It would have been far more difficult in the 70s than it is now, where there really wasn't much tolerance for that, either on the black side of the equation in Brownsville, Brooklyn, where I was living, or the white side of the equation where I had grown up in Canarsie. I was persona non grata by both.
So just like now.
Black guys hated me, white guys hated me, and I just had to struggle to survive all of that. But I will tell you that by the 12 Cleveland Browns, the African-American players taking a knee, and the white guy taking the knee in solidarity, their tight end.
Empathy.
I didn't even pay attention to that.
Of course you didn't.
I paid attention to the fact that you see Calhoun, that defensive back of Cleveland, try to take out Odell Beckham right at the kneecap and almost decapitated his kneecap and maybe caused him to be out of the lineup for the year. Luckily, it was just looked like an ankle sprain at the end. But that's what everybody was mad at. That's what they were focused at. They weren't focused at people taking a knee at the start of the game when the national anthem was being played. But Odell Beckham lying there out on the turf and possibly having had his season discombobulated.
Again, multitasking. I think a lot of people were looking at that protest. That's a huge number now. 12 taking a knee, one white, the first white guy in the NFL to take a knee during the protest. But you're right.
All the black players on the Giants had no love for the brother on the Cleveland Browns who took him out. They basically put a target on his back.
Oh, sure. I was going to say, now, the issue with Odell is not to be taken lightly. That is certainly the star of the New York Giants. And if he's sidelined for the season, then maybe I'll be shady and go back to my Panthers.
I hate Odell Beckham.
Why? Why? Because he's got blonde hair?
No. Well, what he did with the kicking polls last year.
Was a little childish.
He had a little urge
to
merge.
A little tantrum.
Yeah, but then he proposed marriage. Now tell me that's not freaky deaky to the kicking post. Anyway, let's go to Andrew and Stanhope. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here at WABC. Andy.
Hey, what's up? My marriage is an interracial marriage. Also, my wife is Thailand. She's darker skinned, so we're working on having kids, and half of her family is darker. So we all have the jungle fever, Curtis and I. But if Ebony kids look like her, they'll be real beauties. I don't want to say why I'm offended by the knee, because there's actual massacres in Chicago this 4th of July, 100 shootings. Last 4th of July, 87, the one before that, 67.
Oh, no doubt about it, Andrew. Chicago is the murder capital of the U.S. for the second year running. But let me ask you this, Andrew. Why can people not be outraged by either or both? Why does it have to be either or? I'm someone who is horrified by the killings of predominantly young black folks in Chicago. And I'm also horrified that anybody, black, white, purple, or brown, would be unlawfully and unjustifiedly killed by law enforcement. They're not mutually exclusive. Yeah.
Well, just I'll answer your question, and I'll promote a challenge, put a challenge to you. You could like be outraged by both, but disproportionately, the problem is black on black, not white racist cops.
Well, I don't think that there's an equivalency, actually, Andrew. And I think that becomes problem. Exactly. There's no need to equivocate it. There's no need to put one in front of the other. They're both tragic. They're both horrible. And people have a right to be upset about either or both. We'll now go to Billy.
Andrew had mentioned the shootings over the July 4th weekend, which were horrific in Chicago, and the deaths. Guess what? This past weekend wasn't a holiday. Normal 2.5-day weekend, right? You figure you start like Friday night.
What was the total?
68 shot, 8 dead in Chicago.
I don't see any
of the Chicago Bears or any other players taking a knee there to all the death and destruction and the black-on-black crime.
I understand that, but that doesn't take away their right to be outraged by what is going on with the social justice problem. Billy from Turnpike. Billy, you're on 77 WABC.
Good afternoon, Ebony Curtis. Always a pleasure, Billy, on the Turnpike here. I've been giving this a lot of thought about the kneeling during the national anthem, and I believe that this day forward, I'm going to start kneeling for all those who died for our flag, to fight for our flag.
I think that's great. I really do. I think you should.
Black, white, Hispanic, Asian makes no difference to me. All those who have paid the price, I will kneel
for
them.
The ultimate price.
National.
I think that's actually beautiful, Billy. I don't think we can do enough to show support for our veterans. I think that's wonderful.
So now we're going to be kneeling whenever the national anthem is played.
Kneeling, praying, whatever you want to do
banner.
To show respect and acknowledgement.
Oh, God. Why can't you just stand there, show respect?
Why does everybody have to do what Curtis wants to do?
Together,
but if you feel that, as the player said,
Actually,
I'm sure they would. They have leagues in other countries.
Leave.
But you know what? What's better is to be a bold advocate for those who have a plight
of
struggle.
What are they doing for their communities?
I'll tell you what Colin Kaepernick is doing.
Money.
Colin Kaepernick donated over $1 million to backpacks to school. You ask the question. Don't be mad that there's an actual answer. Don't be mad.
How many millions is he swimming in?
Well, less now because he has no job.
Less now, the last few years.
He's got no job.
He's got no job. Pain.
You don't have to feel sorry for him. I'm simply saying that you don't have to run away just because you're personally not as affected
by some
of this stuff.
Colin Kaepernick who didn't even bother voting in elections.
You know what? I feel like talking just about Colin Kaepernick in this moment is missing the point. This is so much bigger. Yes, it is. No, so what? So Mike Brown.
He's the role model.
No, he's not the role model. This issue. No, you could go back to the Olympics. No, they're not. No, they do not. I didn't hear Seth Duvall saying that. I didn't hear Chris Long or Derek Carr saying that.
I would much rather talk about Odell Beckham.
Well, that's because that's convenient. That's convenient. I would actually rather talk about what Seth Duvall is saying, which is that this is the best country in the world, but everyone doesn't have the same opportunities.
Easy for you to say. To the phones we go. It's Tony calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here at WABC. Tone.
Curtis, I don't understand. We're in 2017. I want to know, when is this mantra of not everybody has equality going to end?
Tony, can I answer the question? Because I think it's an important one. I think it's an important one, and I think you asked it in a respectful way. So it's not about it being a mantra, right, like some rallying call or some tagline for a commercial product. I can tell you, Tony, and I'm 33 years old. I've worked two good jobs with great people. I feel safe and supported and loved. So it could be a lot worse. But I will tell you personally, Tony, there have been challenges along the way that I know for fact my white counterparts have an experience. My male counterparts have an experience. Why do I know that? Because we talk about it. It's the way of the world, and we're working on changing it. But we cannot change what we fail to acknowledge.
But,
simple as that.
You know, when does it end, Ebony?
I hope.
When do you
hopefully
stop complaining,
soon.
Huh?
When it gets
when
better.
Do you stop
when it
being
gets
a
better. When it gets never.
Bring the noise.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader,
attorney, radio talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law,
both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law,
to the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up.
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics,
and Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make band-aids for hurt feelings.
The stories, the moments. The Conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new Midday Show, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after one. Curtis, you tried me last segment, asking me, oh, does that mean you weren't watching the presidential address about Afghanistan last night at 9?
No, you were probably watching your colleague's program, Tucker Carlson, who was saying it was the bravest thing he ever saw any American president do in his lifetime. When Trump yesterday peered up at the partial eclipse without having the benefit of the safety glasses, your friend, your colleague, Tucker Carlson said that was the bravest thing he's ever seen an American president do. What's wrong with Bowtie Boy?
Listen, I've worked with Tucker just a handful of times. He's always been, you know what? I don't even have a comment on that. Let me move forward.
Well, let's talk about us being Hyatt Tom Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com as we pump out the 50,000 powerful watts of sound. So while you were multitasking last night, you were watching the Giants debacle against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, kind of bad.
And you were watching the presidential address.
I absolutely was. And as we expected, we talked about it a bit on the specialist around predictions. Because the president is very famous in a short period of presidency that he's had of announcing very early on in the day when he's going to have these primetime speeches so that we have a lot of anticipation around what the narrative will be. And it becomes almost like a spectator sport where we get to spend all day anticipating what he will say. We figured he would stick to prompter, as he did, when he let us know in general that he has a plan that sounds different than what he campaigned about when it comes to Afghanistan.
The consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable. 9/11, the worst terrorist attack in our history, was planned and directed from Afghanistan because that country was ruled by a government that gave comfort and shelter to terrorists. A hasty withdrawal would create a vacuum that terrorists, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, would instantly fill, just as happened before September 11th.
Yeah, I tell you, Curtis, it sounds so familiar. It sounds very similar to President Obama when he ran in 2008 on the anti-war campaign, then got into the Oval and said something that sounds very similar to what President Trump said last night.
My original instinct was to pull out. And historically, I like following my instincts. But all my life, I've heard that decisions are much different when you sit behind the desk in the Oval Office. In other words, when you're president of the United States.
Boy, there was a sexual entendre there about pulling out.
And then having to deal with
the consequences of not doing such. First of all, this is such nonsense.
You are so bold.
This is such nonsense. Mm-hmm. When I was campaigning, I didn't realize what was involved with the presidency.
Shocking.
Now I'm in the White House, so I'm going to embrace the failed Afghan ideas of both Barack Obama and Bush 43.
Yeah, it's almost like you're on the campaign trail for almost 2 years thinking that you have it all figured out. And surprise, surprise, when you get into the Oval Office, when you actually have access to presidential briefings from actual generals on the ground, it seems different.
Well, it may well be because he's surrounded by generals. Many said that was the reason to have Bannon there in the West Wing, is that he was opposed to incursions, opposed to war, and he wanted us out of Afghanistan.
That's
a complete flip of the script by this president, again, I might add. Of the many flips that he's made on the way to the White House from the time when he was a staunch critic of our Afghan policy to the point now where he's going to be sending more troops in.
Yeah.
To achieve what?
And that's the problem. I was prepared. I knew obviously we were going to be hearing about a troop surge. We knew that. But I was hopeful not really thinking it would happen, but hopeful that what we would at least get from President Trump, that we haven't heard from any president yet, because this is the question I ask every day on the Fox News Specialist. I ask it here on Curtis and Ebony. What does winning in Afghanistan look like? Meaning, I want to hear a clear-cut objective as to if you're going to surge the troops, you're going to put more men and women, more of the children of Americans in the line of fire, most of them, what's the death toll? Oh, something close to 5,000 people have died over there. If we're going to do that, Curtis, what are we intending to do?
Let's find out from our many listeners out there. They listen to the president here on WABC, or they watch the president and listen to him simultaneously. Did you like what the president had to say, or do you think he flipped the script and just embraced the failed Afghan ideas of Bush 43 and Barack Obama? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
I will be one bit of positivity, I suppose, in what was overall a very disappointing speech, again, for me, was I did like when the president talked about lifting the restrictions. Because if you remember, Curtis, I don't think I made it up. During the campaign, he said he knew more than the generals. Do you remember when he said that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He knows more than everybody.
He knows more than everybody. Okay, so now I think he understands. He doesn't know more than the generals. And he did say, because I think it's difficult to try to operate in the best interest of national security when you are being micromanaged, as many times they are. So I did appreciate when the president acknowledged this.
I have already lifted restrictions the previous administration placed on our warfighters that prevented the Secretary of Defense and our commanders in the field from fully and swiftly waging battle against the enemy. Micromanagement from Washington, D.C. does not win battles. They are one in the field, drawing upon the judgment and expertise of wartime commanders and frontline soldiers, acting in real time with real authority and with a clear mission to defeat the enemy.
Okay. I mean, that was, I'm looking for the silver lining. I understand it didn't blow your mind when you said
that. Let me cut to the chase. Let me explain to you what needs to be done. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Our ally in the Middle East is Lebanon.
Okay.
Right? They're our allies. They're battling ISIS now. But part of their government is dominated by Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
Hezbollah, who is supported by the Iranians. Sure. We believe them to be an international terrorist group.
Terrorist.
But it's part of the legitimate government of Lebanon. They have been duly elected, Hezbollah. Yet we work with Lebanon. And Hezbollah is battling ISIS on one side of the border of Lebanon, and the Lebanese army is battling ISIS on their side with American help. We have no problem doing that. Yet if you were to say to President Trump, or before that, President Barack Obama, we must work with the Taliban. They're not going away. The Russians support the Taliban. Our allies, the Pakistanis, support the Taliban. The Taliban have the support of a lot of the people in rural Afghanistan. They are not disappearing. They are not going away unless you want us to be involved in a quagmire. They actually have an embassy in Qatar, which is a country we have a friendly relationship with. Qatar recognizes the Taliban. So why not just recognize the Taliban, have elections, supervise the elections, and the government that we support, which is made up of crooks and thieves and people who steal our tax dollars, will have an equal opportunity to compete against the Taliban in open and what I hope will be fair elections. And we need to be done with it. Mm. We need to be done with, unless we want to occupy Afghanistan in perpetuity. And
that's what it looks like. I got to tell you, you're cutting to the chase. I will, too. That's what I suspect, Curtis Lee. Well, I think the plan is clearly to have a 30 to 40 year occupation of Afghanistan, because that's certainly what it looks like to me.
Let's quickly go to Richard calling from Ridgewood. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Rich.
Hello, guys. So I was in Afghanistan 2013 to 14,
okay.
And what this president has done is given a strategy, but the most important thing is the lifting of restrictions for us to engage terrorist forces and the enemy. When I first got into Afghanistan, the first thing I asked is, where is the Taliban leadership? And of course the answer was Pakistan. We are not allowed to go over. We have very serious restrictions. And now it's a different game.
Whoa. No, the president did not say that. He did not say he's going to permit American troops to invade the northwest section of Pakistan to root out the Taliban leadership. He did not say that.
There's a big difference between troops coming over a Pakistan border and doing precision strikes in support
He did not say that. And Pakistan supports the Taliban. The Russians support the Taliban. What, with an additional 4,000 American troops, you think you're going to root out the Taliban that has the support of the people in the rural areas of Afghanistan?
It's the ability strike the leadership over the border.
Oh, man.
That's what,
you know, I respect the service that you did for our country. But in terms of this, you know, we have these bogus enemies out there. Hezbollah is an enemy, yet we work with them. If we could work with Hezbollah in destroying ISIS, as we did in Mosul.
Yeah,
right?
But then,
in Mosul,
Okay, Curtis.
How can we not work with the Taliban?
So let's say we do what you're saying, and we win, and we destroy them there. And then they're not going to pop back up elsewhere? Come on.
No, I'm talking about the Taliban, who have been there consistently before 9/11, throughout 9/11, and to this day, they are the main nemesis.
I just don't think that the occupation gets us closer.
Our numbers, 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Frank calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Frankie?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to both of you for a while. And I appreciate the dialogue going back. Again, I served 4 tours in Iraq.
Thank you. And you know it to a level I won't pretend to understand, Frank, so thank you for that.
Well, look, I understand, but I agree with President Trump's assessment last night, and I'm going to tell you why. A lot of times with these foreign fighters in the Taliban, what they do is they rear up, they hide in these tunnels, and they rear up, and then they shoot across, back across the border into Pakistan. They reconsolidate and they come back in and hit us again, and they run back across the border to Pakistan, and it's been going on like that for years.
So Frank, just your interpretation of what the president said yesterday is he is going to allow our American troops to invade Pakistan to root out the Taliban? I didn't hear that.
Well, my interpretation of what he said, if necessary, we might be doing more surgical strikes on the border, on the other side of the border, to eradicate where their safe havens are on the other side of the border. Because once they cross to the other side of the border, they're reconsolidating, they're assimilating, they're collecting information, they're gathering intelligence.
So, Frank, you really believe that we should sacrifice Americans to support this corrupt regime in Kabul, where all these Afghans, they just take our money. They don't even support their own people. They are corrupt down to the marrow of their bone, and they don't even have the support of their people.
Oh, no. Hey, look, I agree with you, sir, on that. I mean, the Afghan government is corrupt, same as the Iraqi government. We lost trillions of dollars in Iraq, fraud, waste, and abuse. We lost trillions of dollars in Afghanistan.
So if you recognize that, and you served there, I did not, you recognize it was a waste to invade Iraq, and now to stay in Afghanistan. I do not believe it was a waste to invade Afghanistan. We had to at the time because that's where al-Qaeda was based. But to continue occupying Afghanistan, continue to pour money in there, putting in the pockets of corrupt officials who just take all the money for themselves and then complain that we're not doing it.
No, I mean, I think that's a losing strategy. It's been losing for 16 years.
And look at the Afghans. They could just as easily serve on one side or the other, depending on who gives them bakshish, who gives them money. So if all of a sudden tomorrow the Taliban were giving them money, they'd be Taliban. If today it's the Americans, hey, we support the Americans. They are Hessians. They are mercenaries. They don't have in mind a nation state. They are tribal, and we are continuing to make the same mistakes that we did with Bush 43 and Obama. And Donald Trump says,
he said it was going to be different.
I didn't realize it until I got into the White House.
When you get in the Oval, those briefings.
So everything he said on the campaign trail, we should dismiss.
But I love how his supporters, President Trump's supporters, who many of whom are upset with me because of my DACA, actually still have a lot of respect for people that voted for President Trump as well. It's fine. It's your American right to do so. But why this dismissal of the fact that this is the opposite of the campaign that he ran?
And
he ran an American first campaign.
What is the strategic value of Afghanistan? No one has ever been able.
Like, really, what do we get? What do we get?
If the Taliban ruled in Afghanistan, how would that affect the United States, since we have the ability to go in there at any moment and wreak death and destruction on them? Really? Really? Do you know how many billions of dollars we've wasted in that desert area that have just gone into the pockets of corrupt officials like Karzai before and the leadership Abdullah now? 1-800-848-WABC.
Bring the noise!
Studio View and WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
Oh, President Trump doing a little bit of a flip-flop, as many expected, on Afghanistan. We'll go to the phones with Mike. Mike from Jersey, you're on 77 WABC.
Hi, Ebony. Hi, Curtis. Good afternoon. Hope everybody's doing well. Just wanted to say two comments. One about the oil, about not leaving it there. If we're going to be out there, we've been there for so many years and getting nothing, losing a ton of money. What about bringing the oil back, like Trump said in all his speeches?
Mike, Trump said that about Iraq and where ISIS had oil fields in Syria and Iraq, but there is no oil in Afghanistan. That's why I'm saying strategically, there's no value to the land in Afghanistan. There's nothing there.
Right.
What are we getting out of it?
The only thing getting out of it is you have to occupy there, because like Ebony said, once we leave, it's going to be a festering of new ISIS and new terrorists. I mean, but this is an ongoing thing. So I believe we have to be there, but we have to make a stronger presence, and we can't be the only ones out there. There should be other countries that have their men and women doing the same thing, because we all have the same interests.
Okay, but what about Mike? What about the Afghans having the same interests? It's their country. You would think...
They don't care. They get corrupt.
So we should be there. Wait. We should be there even though they don't care.
Well, exactly. We should take charge. I mean, we should just be looking.
Oh, maybe we should annex Afghanistan as the 51st state. Is that what you want to do?
Why not?
Yeah, Afghanistan. Are you out of your freaking mind?
You gotta do something, Curtis.
No. You make peace with the Taliban. They will be a part.
Mike, are you aware
that Lebanon is our ally, right? Lebanon is our ally, and Hezbollah, our mortal enemy, is part of the government there. Hezbollah troops fought alongside our troops and the Iraqi National Army to liberate Mosul. Let's stop ignoring the fact that we're going to have to work with these people because they're not going away. They're not going away.
I don't believe that. I mean, they're
you think they're going away? Mike. You think they're going to go away quietly into the sunset? Come on now.
No, obviously not. But what are we going to do? We're just going to keep turning our wheel there, losing.
I think at some point, and I know this is not the popular thing to say, when do we cut our losses? When do we cut our, either we commit to a 40, 50, 60 year occupation and thousands more American lives, or we cut our losses.
We're arguing about spending money on Americans' health care, right?
Right. Allegedly.
On health care of Afghans who, quite frankly, are taking that money and they're
bolstering
their
terrorism.
Their tribal leaders
are bolstering their terrorism.
Pocketing it.
Yep.
And they're using it against our men and women there.
That's what I know.
And so we're going to fight their war.
Who even said they wanted us to be fighting that war for them? I mean, this is, I'm just not a big fan.
Anyway, let's go to Corey if we can in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Corey?
Hey, Curtis and Ebony, great talking to you guys. I served in the Army for 20 years, and I spent quite a bit of time actually in Afghanistan as a trainer. And just a couple points you let me make them. One, that the Afghan people, I mean, the ones we work with, they'll turn on you for money. So, Curtis, you're absolutely right on that. The border with Pakistan is completely, it's fluid. I mean, it's in the Hindu Kush Mountains. There's no defined border. And another thing is when we go in and we destroy a country like we did in Iraq, you see what happens. Democracy does not work in that part of the world, just in my opinion. I mean, we cannot enforce a democracy onto them, and we should probably, turn it over to contractors.
That's the thing that Donald Trump said yesterday, our president, that we're not into nation building anymore.
Allegedly.
We're not going in.
Allegedly. So what are we into?
Well, I'll take him at his word for what he said about Afghanistan, because we have tried in Afghanistan, first with the peacock, Karzai. Always distrust a man who dresses better than a woman. And Karzai dressed better than you, even in that full-page spread you have today in the New York Post. Evan,
I agree. I do avoid men that try to look better than me.
He was a peacock.
That's true.
And now we have a new leader there, Abdullah, or whatever the hell his name is. Get out of here. They're all corrupt. Let's get some news headlines from Ken Duffy.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air. Online. On the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
No more, Mr. Nice Guy. No more, Mr. Clean. No more,
139. And I don't know if you've ever been in downtown Phoenix at a time in August. It's like 120 degrees in the shade. But
no, thank you.
Alice Cooper has this huge gin mill restaurant right next to the basketball arena. Hmm. And this is the place that Donald Trump is going to convene a mass rally tonight. The Democratic mayor of Phoenix has said, don't come. Obviously, the president is coming.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah.
He's going to be talking about building the wall, having Mexico pay for it. He's also going to be talking about limiting illegal immigration across the border and sending back the bad hombres. And what some fear is that he will announce that he will be pardoning the embattled former sheriff of Maricopa County, Sheriff Arpaio.
So let me stop you. This is where I have continued to applaud the press. I don't like it, but damn, he is good at controlling a message, Curtis Sliwa. Do you remember just a week ago, it was all about the response, the reaction of Charlottesville and his woeful, he was being criticized by both sides of the aisle and many across this country for a very woeful, weak response to that domestic terrorism and hate-filled violence. He pivots last night, has the entire country at attention at 9 p.m. as he talks about Afghanistan. And now, as you're describing to us, he's going to go back to his signature issue, building of the wall, getting rid of the bad hombres, and rejuvenating his base all over again. I got to tell you, slow clap. Slow clap, Mr. President. Way to control the narrative.
Well, while all of that is going down in Arizona tonight, and obviously everybody will be watching exactly what the president says, a service was held at a Manhattan church this past Sunday in solidarity with an undocumented Guatemalan immigrant who will be facing deportation. 13 years ago, Amanda Morales arrived in the U.S. illegally. Mm-hmm. Since she's been here from Guatemala, she's had three children, all of whom are U.S. citizens.
Sure.
However, LIMIGRA, Immigration and Naturalization Authorities,
ICE,
told her last week that she could not stay, that she would be deported back to Guatemala City. She has sought sanctuary in a Washington Heights church. It is surrounded by the religious followers of that church and some local politicos who are saying no. We're not going to allow ICE to come in and extricate Amanda Morales and deport her back to Guatemala. This is similar to what recently happened in New Haven.
Sure.
Family also in which the mother was going to be deported, even though the children were American. They were born here. So I ask all of our listeners, on a day in which the president, once again, as mentioned by Ebony, is going to retune his message, build the wall, build it higher, Mexico will pay for it. Limit the number of illegal aliens, deport the bad hombres. And again, the caveat may be a pardon for Sheriff Arpaio of Maricopa County.
Oh, that's definitely happening.
Who's just been found guilty of civil rights abuses against mm-hmm. immigrants. Would you be in favor of deporting this woman? Just think about her individual case. She hasn't committed crimes while here other than the crime of illegally coming into America. She's had three children while here. She's been gainfully employed, Amanda Morales. Immigration wants to send her back and separate her from her three children to Guatemala. What say all of you? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
I say this. I just want some consistency and intellectual honesty on this issue, Curtis Sliwa. Because let me tell you what I hear. I hear everyone saying, this is what they say. Well, we don't want the bad hombres here. We don't want the rapists. We don't want the murderers. We don't want MS-13. We don't want the gangbangers and the worst sides of the Mexican underbelly to be infiltrating our country, killing our citizens, and taking our good jobs. I get that. No problem. I have no problem with sovereignty. I am a fan of borders and border enforcement. But don't lie. And that, I'm going to call it that, because now it looks like it's a lie. Because when you take a woman who absolutely broke the law when she came here 13 years ago and didn't go through it. Yes, it's a broken, slow immigration process, but she bypassed it and she broke the law by coming here illegally 13 years ago. But the only thing that the only reason we know she's even here, Curtis, as you point out, she didn't commit any crime. She was the passenger in a car accident. And that's when ICE became aware of her. They've been monitoring her for 13 years. And now because President Trump, he campaigned again on getting rid of the rapists, the murderers, and the bad hombres. But what we're seeing in actuality is a complete and total shutdown of anyone here by any illegal means. Well, and if that's what it is, yeah, then that's okay. But be consistent and right, honest about that
it
message.
It should always be on a case-by-case basis.
And that's not
if
what we're
I were
hearing.
The immigration judge, I would ask immigration, why is this woman standing before me?
Mm-hmm.
Has she committed any crimes while here? Is she raising her children?
Is she paying taxes?
They're all citizens, right?
Because that's important.
That's not the mandate of what the president...
And that's my issue. My issue isn't that you want to get rid of people that broke the law by coming here. I have no problem with that. But be straight up. Tell the truth to the American people. Don't pretend that you're targeting rapists, murderers, and gangbangers when the truth is it's any and everybody, including women like this woman right here, Miss, what's this, Morales. It's the New Haven woman. It's many people who have done nothing wrong other than coming here illegally in the first place.
Let's quickly go to Tony calling from Orange County. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Tone.
Hi, Curtis. Curtis, I would be happy to see her returned from whence she came and her children that were born here because...
Well, that's not going to happen because they're United States citizens, Tony.
Well, yes, I'd like to see that law changed because she came here illegally and her offspring are rewarded by her criminal act. She committed a crime when she entered office.
All right, but Tony, that being the case, the law does not allow for that. If you were the judge and you would see her children there saying, please, judge, don't separate us from our mother and send her back, you would be able to look at the children and say...
He said he'd be glad about it. He said glad.
Yes, someone would have to. We either enforce our laws or we don't. And if we don't enforce the laws, we only encourage others.
Now, imagine if that had happened to you, that you had been born here, your mother had somehow worked her way in here illegally. Would you want to see your mother sent back to her country of origin?
You already know the answer to that question, but it has to be we either live by our laws or we don't.
I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you separate a mother from her children. I really
don't
know how you do
that. Not someone who hasn't done any wrongdoing
in
13
years. Let's go to Michael in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Michael?
Yes, hi. Thank you. I think the woman should also be sent back, and I believe that because she knew what she was doing, and I meant to ask, too, I didn't hear anybody say, how old are the children?
I'll tell you, the children are, the youngest is 2 years old, David, Daniela is 7, and Dolce is 9.
Now, that complicates it, and how far along is she in seeking American citizenship?
That I could not tell you. I do know she's been under supervision since 2012 when she was, again, identified in that car wreck as a passenger.
Okay, so we don't even know if she wants to be an American citizen.
Well, I'm sure she does, which is why she's trying to stay and showing up to her ICE appointments under the supervision model that they have.
But it sounds like she wants to because now she's nabbed.
Now she's nabbed. I mean, she doesn't have a choice.
She got children who are 2, 7, and 9. Michael, who's going to take care of them?
Well, she still can't take care of them by taking them home with her.
Oh, I see. Okay. So
yeah, that's
the children, even though the children don't have to go legally, they're going to have to go too.
Correct.
Because the mother is leaving.
But she loves her children so much, why would she want to be separated?
Is this what you weaned from the president when he was campaigning, that it's people like Ms. Morales who are going to be sent back? Is that the message he gave out?
Yes.
I sort of thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
I
appreciate your honesty. I think that's honest, Michael. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, but he always vacillated on that.
Yeah, that's what I said. Just be straight up about it. Okay, we'll go to Kirk from Long Island. Kirk, you're on 77 WABC.
Hi, Curtis. Hi, Ebony. How are you? First time caller.
He's had better days, Kirk. Go ahead, though.
Alrighty. I'm an immigrant myself. I migrated from the from the Caribbean. And, you know, one of the things that actually poses a kind of a dismay in my soul is that most people who actually comes here, I know we break the law, we come here, we try to get, you know, betterment, but for the most part of it, you know, most people who really comes here are not coming here to commit crimes. What it is, you find the younger folks who comes here, like at teenagers and maybe in their teens, they get caught up in the system. They get caught up with the gangs in schools, and they feel the pressure. They want to somewhat fit in, as we call it in the Caribbean. So, you know, the older folks are coming here really, you know, to provide for their family, to make a better, you know. Cause
can I tell you a secret, Kirk? There are some people in this country that sympathize with the Kate Steinleys of the world and really are afraid of, quote, people coming here illegally and killing and raping and the worst elements. There's another part, and again, nobody wants to say this. There's another part that don't want any people crossing the Mexican border, not for fear of rape, murder, or gangbanging, but for fear of economic ostracizing. They are afraid of people coming to this country and lowballing them via wages and taking their jobs. And that is truly motivating their obsession with building this wall and making sure that the southern border is protected. That is a part of it as well.
Well, you know, when all of a sudden you don't have illiterate illegals coming across the border who are willing to do any kind of work, and you're wondering why, when all of a sudden you need trees to be cut down and hauled away and salvage to be taken out of your basement and demolition to be done and all the other jobs that a lot of Americans will no longer do, and work back in the kitchen and in the backstretch of the horse emporiums, and we can go on and on and on and on in terms of what the illegals do. Then what are you going to do? Are you going to go out into the fields yourself? Are you going to attend to the horses yourself? Are your children going to do that? Are your grandchildren going to do that?
And also, by the way, we talk about the economic. Okay, maybe you feel they're going to take the jobs. Guess what? To your point, if no one's picking avocados, oranges, grapes, and tomatoes for a little or nothing, you know how much an avocado or an orange is going to cost in this country?
Now, I guess Americans are going to have to go in the fields and pick their own. You know, you get to pick
what you're
going to eat. I ain't
picking nothing. That day is over. Emancipation is here, baby.
Oh, you're not suckering me into that.
Oh, good job. When you know better, you do better. Look
right
at you.
Here on
you
WABC.
Can't teach an old dog new tricks.
The fun.
You didn't know what was going to happen.
The stories.
This is actually great news.
The guests that matter.
You're such an idiot, Sid.
A New York icon. Imus in the morning. Weekday mornings at 6.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Listen, laugh, learn. 77 WABC. Where New York comes to talk.
Watch on Fios pay-per-view, boxing's biggest showdown. On August 26th, Mayweather versus McGregor will face off in the fight of a lifetime with amazing picture and sound quality delivered on a 100% fiber optic network. You'll feel like you're ringside. Sign up at GetFios.com today.
All right, Curtis Sliwa walks around with his Dwayne Wade Reed bag, and it's all tied up with all these handles. Looks like a hot mess. I carry a big bag. If you see me in the streets of New York, I have a bag that's almost the size of me because I have so much stuff I have to put in it. My heels for work, my makeup, I do the radio show sans, all that stuff. So, you know, it's big, it's heavy, literally probably weighs close to 10 to 15 pounds. Takes a toll on me. I'm a little woman. I pack a big bite and a large punch, but I'm slight in frame. So my back, it's often killing me. And if you suffer from your back like I do, then you need to do what I've done. You need to try the newest breakthrough product for back pain. Listen, I got my hands on it. I saw Curtis wearing it one day, and I said, I need me one of those. His was black. Mine is a nice, dainty pink. Hashtag pretty powerful. It is the Zero Compression Back Brace. Let me tell you, if you look right now in our live stream at WABC Radio/live, you will see me wearing this pink Zero Compression Back Brace. And now, I do not have the pain that I once felt. This brace works where other devices have failed me. It's not like anything else because it molds to my body. You can put it exactly as tight or as loose as you want. It is very, very comfortable. It's ultra light, doesn't weigh me down, and it's designed not to put any pressure on my spine. Listen, apparently it was designed by a nurse, so she understood exactly what she was doing. She had back pain just like I do, just like many of you. She was out on disability, and she was able to come up with this brilliant product. I was able to immediately feel the difference, and I do mean literally. It was immediate, right away. The minute you put it on, I felt supported and lifted. It's only $49.95, and that's really not very much at all for exactly the product and the improvement that you will feel the instant you put on the Zero Compression Back Brace. No matter your condition, whether it's a hernia, a slipped disc, or just pain from sitting too long at work or wearing high heels or carrying around groceries, this is the concrete jungle. Many of us have to carry big bags like me and Curtis all day. You don't have to have the pain. You can relieve it, or if you don't, you can have your money back in 15 days. Listen, this is for men. This is for women. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter. And it's not even a medical device. It's something that works instantly. Try it today and you can start enjoying your life, because let me tell you, it's made a difference for me and it will for you. Visit them at endallbackpain.com. That's endallbackpain.com.
To the phones we go. It's Frank out in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Frankie.
Yeah, I had two questions. One question, is it the same father? And if not, how many fathers? And how much government assistance was it? Did it take to bring up these three kids?
Frank, may I ask why you're asking about the father situation?
Because I think he should be held accountable.
Okay, so what difference does it make? If it's three different fathers or one father, if they're paying child support, what difference does it make?
It's a big difference. You come into the country, you have three different kids, we support them. You don't.
No. I'm asking you, if let's say she has three different baby daddies, if they're all three paying child support, what difference does it make?
Well, then she doesn't have to worry about staying in the country. She's got three fathers taking care of the kids.
No, but I'm asking why you're asking that question.
Because it's part of the question.
Because you're stereotyping? Because you're stereotyping because she's a woman of Hispanic descent, she must be promiscuous? That's what it sounds like to me.
I'm just asking the question. You're not answering it.
No, because I'm not this woman. I don't know her business.
We don't have the answers.
It sounds like a racial stereotype to me. Sorry, I don't know that he would be asking that of a woman of a different race descent. I really don't.
Anyway, that story will continue, and we'll see what the president has to say tonight in Arizona. We'll certainly be commenting on that tomorrow here on Curtis and Ebony.
Popcorn, chicken wings ready.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader,
attorney, radio, talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law,
both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law,
to the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up.
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics,
and Ebony K. Williams,
they don't make band-aids for hurt feelings.
The stories, the moments, the conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Work, 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 work. You tell me how you work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. That's how me better work, 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 work.
Look at Curtis Sliwa getting all hot and bothered. Look, I mean, he can barely contain it. It's his girl, Riri. Now, Curtis, you know we have a policy here at Curtis and Ebony. You can only get one or two Rihanna songs a week because you don't know how to handle yourself.
Oh, I'm handling myself. I'm cool, calm, and collected.
That weekend slow grind really gives us a side of Curtis Sliwa that I'm not prepared for.
Well, if you go to wabcradio.com/live, you can see Ebony K. Williams resplendent in her canary yellow apparel.
Thank you. Thank you.
Although, yesterday I noticed you on the specialist. You were wearing white, and the woman next to you was wearing white. That's a faux pas, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't get any second floor calls from that. Technically, Lisa was wearing white and black. You couldn't see the black. It was a color block. But yes, the optics were not ideal.
But if you go to wabcradio.com/live, where you can actually watch the program in addition to listening to it, you notice every time they play Miss Bajan's song, Rihanna, I have a smile on my face.
Oh, yes, you do.
As opposed to when all of a sudden Ebony decides to play Thunder Thighs Beyonce and I have a frown on my face.
Yeah, it is quite remarkable. But, you know, that's actually something else other than Greek yogurt that we have in common. I much prefer Rihanna to Beyonce as well.
But you have the fat-free yogurt, and I have the fat yogurt. Anyway, we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to engage all of you in this broadcast by NJDiet.com. And I see that you have hit your age line here.
Yep, approaching it rapidly.
In determining when people start hitting their jobs. Why don't you break it down for us, Ebony?
Yes, the Bloomberg.com headline. Unsurprising to me, I'll see what you think. People start hating their job around the age of 35. Now, like many things in life, I'm a little ahead of the curve. I never hated being a lawyer. In fact, I love the law, but I did have an itch to do something broader, something that felt bigger, a larger scale. So around 27 is when I decided that I'd practiced law for 5 years and some change by that point, and I wanted to transition into media. So I kind of, you know, if you want to say, hated the job enough to get a new job, I started that at 27. But this article says most people get that itch around 35 years old. Now, let me ask you, Chris, because you've been on radio over 30 years.
No, not quite. Now, I mean, I've been engaged in radio because of the controversial nature of what I created in 1979, The Guardian Angel. So it was always a flashpoint in doing interviews.
Okay.
But I started doing radio here at WABC in 1991, in like the spring of 1991, right before the Persian Gulf campaign.
Okay, so 20 some odd.
Right. Think about 26 years.
Oh, 26 years. Okay, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. So the point is you've been doing your job for longer than most of these people that are getting disenchanted with theirs have been alive. And so my question is, what do you tell a 35-year-old that's at a kind of a, it's a little pre-midlife crisis, so
well,
to speak?
If I look at my own experience, I loved collecting garbage, which I did without getting paid because I ran recycling centers when I was in high school.
Is that why you carried that Dwayne Reed bag that looks like a garbage can?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And
that
I've been recycling before they even invented the term. So I love picking up garbage. The one thing I wanted to be when I was a 5-year-old kid riding around the neighborhood of my tricycle in South Ozone Park was a garbage guy. Never got to become one. When the Jesuits kicked me out of high school, out of Brooklyn Prep, unceremoniously shined their boots on my backside, I went out and started pumping gas and did so for over a year at Rocky Shell Station right on Seaview Avenue and Rockaway Parkway. I loved it. I could have kept doing it for the rest of my life. Then I got a job packing shells at AMP. I was a key man overnight on the corner of Forster Avenue across from the 69th precinct on Rockaway Parkway. And I love that job, and I would have kept doing it forever. But what happened is there, last hired, first fired, as they were downsizing AMPs at that time. And then I schlepped up to the Bronx and became a night manager of Mickey D's, which I hated.
You talk about that job a lot.
Every second of it. I despised being a manager at Mickey D's, although I learned a lot from it, that I was able to incorporate in the Guardian Angels that I started as a night manager of Mickey D's in 1979 on East Fordham Road and Webster Avenue in the Bronx. So I would say I think a lot of people actually start hating their jobs at a much earlier age
than 35. Well, like I said, for me, it was 27 that I knew it was time to move on. But I love to hear from our callers. And if you find yourself at 35 years old hating your job, is it okay to change? Because a lot of people find themselves at this place. A lot of my friends are exactly this age. You're right. We're 34, 35, 36, 37. And it feels stagnant. It feels stuck. But you've also kind of at that middle management part where you got to sacrifice a lot financially to go and pivot into something new. So do you take that risk? Do you roll the dice? Do you, as I talk about in Pretty Powerful in the epilogue, bet on yourself and your ability to transition and start over? Or do you play it safe? Do you stay put? Do you just say, I just need to earn a living, make enough to eat and put a roof over on my head? Who cares if I hate it?
I think a lot of it has to do as to whether you have kids or not, if you're responsible
That's
for
true.
Kids. A lot of times, let's face it, nowadays, later in life, people are having children. You're saddled with their responsibilities. You'd like to make a break with the job that you have because you're miserable. You're really hating the job that you have. But it's what provides you the income to provide for your family, so you just keep schlepping it.
Sucking it up. No, that's 100% true, and I want to really be very forthcoming. I had the luxury to dip out of the law and dip into something new in broadcast because I am no one's mother. That is 100. If I had children, I often said I would not have had that luxury. Now, it cost me a marriage, as you know, I've talked about here on Careers and Ebby. My ex-husband did not take kindly to my transition, but if I had children, I couldn't have even made the choice.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Jimmy first up in the queue, calling from the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Jimmy.
Hey, it's Jimmy from Brooklyn.
What up, Jimmy from Brooklyn?
All right, how you doing, Ebony? Curtis, you guys got a great show. Keep it up. Curtis, just to pick up on what you were saying, I also, my father was in the garbage business, the rubbish removal business, and when I got out of high school, I had the choice to either go to college or to, you know, pick up so no pun intended, to pick up, you know, where Dad left off. And I wound up building it into a roll-off container business and private sanitation. And, you know, along the way, I just realized that, is this something I want to do for the rest of my life? Or do I want to make a change? And, you know, at that, well, I was about 33, 34, I realized that I really did have a passion for it. But, you know, what if you are at that age and financially you're not able to do anything about it? You know, then you really have a problem. Like, what if you can't change jobs? What if you can't change careers, you know?
It's really hard. It's really, yeah, it's really hard to do. I mean, particularly if you're 35, chances are you're at a place in your career where you're earning decent coin. You've got some leverage professionally, and you're walking away from an awful lot to start over. And there's no guarantees, by the way, Jimmy, that you're going to love the next job either.
That's true. That's
well, how about
true.
We do no, this? Jimmy, are you still involved in private waste management?
Yes, I am.
Okay, how about we switch roles? I always wanted to ride on the back of a garbage truck. I did for a while.
My gosh.
I'd be more than happy to ride one of your trucks. And, hey, you can come
and we'll
here
bring
and be
in Jimmy.
Ebony.
It'll be Jimmy and Ebony.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll do role reversal.
It would be my pleasure, Curtis.
Oh,
that'll be fun.
I love it.
Hey, one rule, though, Jimmy. No wearing red in studio.
Hold on the line. I want you to get Jimmy's information
Curtis,
here.
Curtis gets really in his feelings when people wear red.
I love being a garbage guy. I really do. Private sanitation or working for the sanitation department.
You would be good
department.
At that. You would be very good at
great.
That.
I was great. I used to collect tons of it and recycle it.
Because you're a hoarder.
Anyway, to the phones we go. Next up in the queue is Rob, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Robbie?
Hey, what's up, Curtis? How you doing?
I've had better days.
Had better days. Listen, the only thing I hated, I loved my job and everything, but it was the commute every day on the train. That was what really drove me crazy, for real.
Oh, and you know something? I really can't blame you. People who are stuck on buses or trains and sometimes commuting 2 hours one way, 2 hours another way. That's like 5 days a week, sometimes more. 10 hours just stuck commuting. That's got to drive you nuts.
Yeah, it was like at the end, because I retired a few years ago. It was at the very end that I just dreaded getting on that freaking train every day. I just take the B train before it was the D train in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but you know what? Where you are now in Staten Island, there are some people that get up on the South Shore. They get in their car. They get stuck on that Staten Island Expressway. They're stuck like 2 hours in traffic both ways. And it's just they're living on Staten Island, and they're scratching their head and saying, I can understand if this were the Poconos, you know, and I'm schlepping back and forth. But 2 hours each way?
I know. It's ridiculous. I drop my wife off every morning. I take her to the bus stop, and where I start, there is traffic, and the school didn't even start yet. Wait till September comes, and it's even worse.
Yep,
you know?
Yep. Yeah, and that's what people end up kicking themselves in the tuchus about. They spend so much of their workday just traveling to and from.
Yeah, the commute will make you literally an angry person. We'll go to Jeff from Port Chester. Jeff, you're on 77 WABC.
Hey, Ebony, how are you?
I'm doing great.
You're a great compliment to Curtis there. Love listening to your show.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
I was also loved you when you were on Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time on The Factor as well. Thank you, Jeff.
I was in the corporate world for since college, got an MBA, 50 years old, working for a lot of private equity companies, every 5 years looking for another job. You work 10, 12 hours, and out the door you go. I said to myself, my mid-50s, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm working for myself. So I went in, reinvented myself, went completely outside of it. I was a treasurer, risk manager, finance guy, basically. And I bought a property care business, basically using organic product to treat people's properties and plants. And I completely out of my field. As Curtis said, ever push your chips to the table. Do you believe in yourself? Absolutely. I got 3 kids. One just started college, and I have a special needs child. I'm not putting my life in anybody else's hands again.
No, good for you. That, you know, Jeff, obviously you sound like a real man's man, but you sound exactly like what I am articulating and advocating for in my book, Pretty Powerful. And that's not really a shameless plug, because we're going to spend all next segment doing that. But no, my epilogue is about betting on yourself, about saying, you know what? I'm not happy. I have a skill set and talent that could afford me the opportunity to do more. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be without financial setbacks and personal sacrifices, but you can make it happen. That's absolutely true.
We're going to spend the next segment talking about your book.
Well,
What are you, Michael Savage here?
Well, we'll frame it in news. You know, the current U.S. Treasury Secretary, Mnuchin, you know, his wife is getting a lot of slack on the internet, on the Twitterverse here, because she was talking about her Louis Vuitton and her Hermes and Tom, like, you know, Tom Ford, dropping all these names and luxurious things.
Like
and,
you do.
And, yeah, but trust me. Me and this lady are in way different tax brackets. Trust and believe that. And so she's getting a lot of slack. And so I'm going to break it down with one of our mutual friends. And God, that's a short list. Monica Crowley. You know, she's in the book. And Monica really has some good advice for what the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin's wife should be saying instead.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Pete in Westchester. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Peter.
Pete, I spoke to you before. I'm a teacher in the South Bronx. And you know what gets me through my job every day is just working with the children. And this summer I taught autistic children in District 75. And this is what gets me through every day in my job and why I don't want to leave it. It's the adults like you, Curtis, who keep on constantly, ignoramusly bashing on teachers with that shred of evidence about what you talk about.
What do you mean, the UFT, Union of Failed Teachers?
Oh, the Union of Failed Teachers. What's wrong with the UFT, Curtis?
Oh, it's such a stellar organization. They're really out to protect the children and their own men. Michael Moglu couldn't care damn about the safety of teachers.
You would fail, Curtis.
I would fail?
Mm. Yes, you would,
Curtis. How would I fail?
Let's see you do it. Put your money where your mouth is.
You don't think I can control a classroom, Pete?
No.
Really?
No.
In the South Bronx?
I'd love to see it. I would love to see it.
It wouldn't be the wimpy kind of ways that you're taught now. It's basically let the kids run the classroom.
Yeah,
if they want to put their head down, let them put their head down. If they want to be disruptive, let them be disruptive.
Yeah, that's it, Curtis. Where do you get this information from? You've seen it firsthand?
Yes.
Oh, when? Tell me.
When? I've been in many public schools. I've taught classes in public school. Lafayette High School in Brooklyn, right, that they had to bifurcate because they couldn't manage the campus, which used to be a great public school in a great neighborhood.
Oh, and this has nothing to do with home life. This has nothing to do with the poverty.
Oh, here it is, right. Okay, it's not the UFT.
Teach a fourth grade class. Let me see you teach autistic.
Okay, so you're saying the UFT is dedicated to the children of our city, right?
Hey, more so than the DOE is.
Oh, yeah? Department of Education, dumbest organization ever.
I'll agree with you on that.
I'd like to lump both of them together, DOE and UFT.
What do you have against the UFT?
Because you're not fighting for the children and you're not fighting to protect your own teachers in the classroom who are under siege, oftentimes by criminals who are allowed to come in to the school system. Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm Michael Moglu. He's a friend of the mayor. Does nothing for the children and nothing for the teachers.
Mm.
It's a high-priced lobbying organization in
Albany. I love teachers and I love public school teachers too, but I got to say, a lot of those unions protect mediocrity in the teaching profession, and that's my beef
with
them.
And they attack charter schools.
Yeah, and you know what?
It's a
big choice. For some are crap, but some are very, very good, and the parents should have a choice.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
For your midday,
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony, exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. It's Jimmy up in the queue from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony K. Williams here on WABC. Jimmy?
Hey, what's happening, Curtis? Great show. Great show. Ebony, same thing. Terrific.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Love listening to you.
Thank you.
You know, you really hit a nerve when you... We're talking about changing careers.
Sure.
At 35, because that's what happened to me.
Oh, tell me about it.
I was in accounting and finance for a number of years when I got out of college. And it was something.
Were you at like a bank, one of the big banks or something?
No, I worked in public accounting and also in the music business.
Okay, cool.
So it just was gnawing at me that, you know, I wasn't satisfied. And I decided at about that time to really pursue what my dream was to become a jazz singer. Big band singer.
You can't see me, but I'm smiling. I think that's awesome that you're following me.
Well, I did it in tandem while I was working. Still,
right. Hustle. Jimmy? That's called hustle. And I'm glad I talk about this. Everybody says they want to chase their dreams and they're scared. You gotta be about that hustle life, right? You gotta moonlight. You gotta work and pay the bills. And at the same time, you gotta pursue your craft.
Hey,
continue.
I was going to piano bars like at 10 at night on a weekday night.
After working a full workday, right? Yeah.
And, you know, and you can't listen to people because people aren't going to share your dream half of the time.
Oh,
they're going to say,
Jimmy,
you can't do it, don't worry about it.
Hey, guess what, Jimmy?
They don't see you in that light, but you got to ignore that and just go for it if you really believe it in your heart.
Jimmy, you know what you are? You're pretty powerful, my brother.
Well,
that's what I do
today. Now I do it professionally today. As a matter of fact, they used my voice in A Bronx Tale when it was on Broadway, Chaz Palminteri.
You've got a great voice. Yeah, people will say you're crazy. Everybody told me I was crazy. I'm sure they told you were crazy.
Yeah.
But you have to bet on yourself. You got to believe in your own talent and your own ability to cultivate that talent and that dream and manifest it into your reality. It can happen.
Absolutely. And once you internalize it and you become that you wish to become, it comes to fruition. If
change
you
your
have
life.
The talent and the ability, and you know you
and you put
have
and you put
there,
the work behind it, right?
It
you got to do
a
that.
A lot of work. People say, "Yeah, you've been doing this. How do you make it look easy?" I said, "Yeah, I've been doing this for a very long time, honing the craft and paying your dues."
You're probably in the bacchus, the bathroom, singing to yourself in the mirror over and over and over to develop that rhythm.
Yeah, he's got a nice voice. I could hear him in The Bronx Tale right now. That's a beautiful story. Talk about encouraging, huh, Ken Duffy? I mean, just makes you want to shed a tear. Seriously.
I notice how every one of these callers leads into a promotion for your book.
Well, it just happens
you
to be...
You sound like Mark Levin and Mike Savage, right?
I'm not even really
I'm going to give you a free copy of my next book that hasn't even been written yet.
I mean, I hate to be that woman, but it's so timely.
Oh,
literally,
gosh.
That's the whole bet on yourself. I mean, that's the epilogue of the book. I mean, talk about right on time. But anyways, we'll take some calls now. I mean, some calls, some news from Ken Duffy.
Bring the noise!
Studio View, MWABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
What is this crap?
Oh my gosh. Curtis Sleewa, what am I going to do without you?
You can't even diddy bop to this music.
That's a diddy bop beat. You got to just like move your shoulders a little bit. Do a little bounce, a little
this
club bounce.
So lame.
This
so
is Khalees. This is the ex-wife of Nas. You familiar with, Nas?
Oh, I hate Nas.
Shocking.
From the Queensbridge Project.
Breaking news, Curtis Sleewa hates a rapper. I cannot believe
it. He is a degenerate hip-hop monster.
Yeah, I guess between his time at Harvard.
On the level with Jay-Z, your other friend.
Oh, yeah.
And a whole bunch of others.
Actually, really like Nas. But that's his ex-wife, Khalees, and that was her hit in the kind of early to mid-2000s, Bossy. And it was kind of a bossed girl anthem around women who are self-assured and confident and know how to get what we want. So we came back with that because now we're going to talk... Da, 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 more pretty powerful.
Oh,
I know you can't
God.
Wait for that.
Here it is. It's like we might as well take a page out of Michael Savage's show and Mark Levin's show, which are two shows that are infomercials for their books, coming books, books that they're going to write 10 years from now, books that they're having wet dreams about writing at night.
Okay, well, before we do that plug, we'll do another plug. How about this one for Curtis and Ebony?
Sure.
Is that one okay?
Excellent.
Okay, good. All right. We're doing this new thing. It went very well last Friday at 2:30. We're going to do it every Friday at 2:30. Ask Ebony, where you, Curtis Lee, are going to act a bit as my Vanna White. You're going to set up, you're going to lobby up the questions for me from our listeners. They can reach us, submit your question directly at askebony@wabcradio.com, or you can put it on our Facebook, Curtis and Ebony page. You can tweet it to us on Curtis and Ebony. And you can ask me anything involving relationships. How about travel as we're going into the fall? People trying to still take vacations. Talk about that. Cooking. You know, I fancy myself a bit of a chef, even though you hate my culinary ability, Curtis Lee. Well, I know what I'm doing in the kitchen. You can ask and tweet me questions about that. And then, of course, legal and fashion advice would probably be my biggest expertise. So Ask Ebony. That's going to be popping every Friday, 2:30.
And I'm the Vanna White. Why? Because I'm a Caucasoid. My skin is white, or I'm vapid like Vanna White.
First of all, I love Vanna White. That's first of all. Okay. You talk about a woman that could keep a job. Vanna White has been flipping those letters for damn near 30 years.
So you need out there to email your questions in advance to Friday's extravaganza to ask Ebony at WABCradio.com. And then I will be the inquisitor, and I will pose the questions to Ebony K. for Kardashian Williams herself.
That's right, and we'll do it just like
and
we did
last week. And I noticed today, full-page spread in the New York Post about Ebony. In fact, I was looking to see if I could unfold it like you could in the old penthouse. And
oh, you went to see some more skin, huh?
Well, it said it was a big spread, right? So I figured there'd be a big spread on you. And I noticed that you were not showing your back, the fact that you have no back. Everything was frontal. Not nudity,
because it's
frontal.
A family paper. Okay, this is not Penthouse.
Wait, the New
this
York Post.
Not, yeah, this is not this
a
is
family
not,
newspaper.
Sure, of course it is.
I don't think it's ever been described as such.
Well, now it is. So it's not. No, this is not Penthouse. This is not Playboy. This is not even Maxim. Okay, I'm showing three classic looks here. Dress for Success. This is a little bit like an Ask Ebony. Dress for Success, according to May, standing out smartly. So I got a nice job interview look here. It's a nice clean color palette. Nothing distracting. At work, obviously, I work in television and radio, so, you know, I do my take. And then the office party is something cocktail. It's nice. It's tasteful. It's classic, but it's got a little pop. And then, you know, I go into great detail in the piece. Pick it up at the New York Post, or you can go to NewYorkPost.com and you see more. But listen, let's
or you can go on the Curtis and Ebony Facebook page, in which Justin B. Love has dutifully posted it there.
Yes.
What are you, her Maytag here? What is wrong with you, Justin?
Justin's just a lover, not a fighter, unlike yourself. But let's broaden it out to a conversational piece. Like I said, I was looking on Twitter, as I do all during the show, and people are like, what are you doing on your phone? I'm engaging. I'm tweeting. So I'm seeing that Steve Mnuchin, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who just got married, I don't even think it's been a month or two ago, to a young woman. I think she's...
an actress.
Sweet. Yeah, but I want to say, is she Swedish? She's of some... other descent, other nationality, rather. Anyways,
she is a real diva.
Okay, well, she's really pretty blonde. I think she's about 36, so pretty significant age gap between her and Mnuchin.
Yeah,
about
and Mnuchin is her sugar daddy. There's no doubt about
Lord.
That.
Oh, Lord. She's a producer and a filmmaker, Curtis.
Yeah, I'm
that's
sure.
That's what her bio says.
An actress,
a producer,
and a filmmaker.
Anyway, she's getting into all kinds of hot water because...
And she should.
Yeah, because she is talking on Instagram about her Hermes bag, her, you know, Valentino, her all this designer expensive crap. Now, I get it. Steve Mnuchin is a very, very rich man. He was rich far before he got into the administration. They're obviously taking private jets and all this stuff. So she's getting dragged, as the kids would say,
on Twitter and Instagram. Well, I think the criticism this time and why it was merited, because she was exploiting all of her riches.
Sure.
As she was contacting people on Instagram, is they were being flown on a government jet.
Yep.
A facsimile of Air Force One, although much smaller,
mm-hmm.
to Fort Knox, where both she and her husband, the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, were marveling at the $186 billion of gold supply that was tinkling their eyes right in front of them. In fact, they had to wear those same glasses in going to Fort Knox that you wore yesterday to see the partial eclipse because it is so bright. And then she's ranting at any of her critics. We paid more taxes than you. And I know all of a sudden it's we.
We. Well, yeah, as of 2 weeks ago, they started filing jointly. So let me read this section. This is a pretty, because I've been, you know, a lot of people are curious. What's in Pretty Powerful? All they see is this glamour photo on the cover. I'm obviously writing a book with a provocative title, By Design, where I encourage women to not shy away. Don't be ashamed of the fact that, guess what, ladies? What we look like matters. It matters in this country. It matters more today than it ever did before because we got Instagram, Snapchat, video streamings. Everybody's a journalist. Your picture's everywhere. So don't run away from it. Embrace it.
How about I give a little thumbnail sketch here?
Okay, please.
Think Marie Antoinette. Think Ebony K. Williams' book. Let them eat cake.
Oh, okay. Is that a Tina Fey
crumb
reference?
Cake.
Okay.
Crumb cake.
Anyways, going back to Mnuchin's bride,
yes.
who I agree with you, in pretty poor taste, is bragging and flaunting on the taxpayers' expense.
Styling and profiling.
Sure. So this is from our mutual friend, Miss Monica Crowley, who you told me used to work here at WABC in a nighttime program.
Correct.
And so we both know her very well. I used to debate partner with her on the O'Reilly Factor for over a year. I know Monica Crowley very well, and she was gracious enough to grant this interview, where she talks about her first job out of college being for former President Nixon. And I describe how that happens, because that was a true power play. But listen, this is what she says in reference to Mnuchin's wife. Not directly, but I'm making the correlation. Crowley brilliantly pointed out that with this role, her role working for the president, she would be working as a public servant. And as such, she wanted to reflect respect for the public pocketbook. Her look needed to convey an understanding and appreciation of the fiscal responsibility she had to the community. That's not to say anyone working in the public sector needs to look inexpensive or less put together, but it's the acknowledgement that when you work on behalf of the public and the public is paying you, you need to have an awareness of that fact reflected in your appearance. Crowley astutely articulates that visual reflection ensured her credibility to the public, and that would continue to serve her throughout her career. So I really think Mnuchin's bride can take a page out of Monica Crowley's book, and that respect for the American pocketbook. I'm not saying you got to look like a bag lady. You can still look nice, but you don't need to flaunt it. And you need to show that you understand, especially as a conservative, for goodness sakes, that you understand respecting the fiscal dime of the American people.
It's similar to what happened, caught up with Condoleezza Rice after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans.
Sure, and she was looking for shoes.
On Fifth Avenue. Yep. And then also what happened originally with Nancy Reagan when her husband was elected into the White House. Sure. And she immediately decided in a time of fiscal restraint to do a major rehaul of the White House in terms of drapes,
renovation,
carpets,
flip this house.
And it didn't go well with people.
No.
Over well with people. No. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. But they flaunted. They're ostentatious, just like you are, Ebony K. Williams.
Oh, please. That's, I'm a woman of the people, Sliwa.
Yeah, you're a woman of the peeps, right? I can see that you're at Popeye's every day getting that fried chicken and those.
They closed the one near my house. They closed the one I went up in my neck of the woods. I was so sad about that.
That's because of the hipsters there. 1-800-848-9222. And you're not really advocating, though, that you be ostentatious, that you flaunt your wealth or riches.
The opposite. Matter of fact, here's another example from the book. This is from the first chapter, A Cautionary Tale. As should have been predicted, Clinton experienced social media backlash. Hillary Clinton, when she wore a $12,000, $495 Armani jacket during that speech she gave on income inequality during the campaign. Do you remember that? And again, I don't understand why people in the public, I know less, you're running for public office, operative word there, public, think that you're not going to get called out, not for looking good. Nobody's hating on that. In fact, we don't want our public representatives looking like crap.
Remember, she told us that they left the White House in a poor and impoverished state.
Yeah, but somehow she got that $13,000 for that Armani jacket.
That when she was at the governor's mansion in Little Rock, that she would every year donate, believe it or not, Bill Clinton's used, soiled BVDs and Fruit of the Loom to Goodwill and write it off on their taxes. Write off his underwear on their taxes.
So disgusting.
Is that the height of chutzpah or what?
I'm really disgusted right now.
1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad.
God, I hate this song.
By all of the things I
what is this, your theme song for your new book?
Love Bruno Mars.
And as I look through this three-page spread in today's New York Post, you can get it in the hard copy or go online or just go to Curtis and Ebony, the Facebook page that we have. It pays to be pretty. Three pages. I've read every word. Read it twice.
Did you?
And I'm saying, no mention of the Curtis and Ebony show here on WABC. Lots of mention of Fox News Channel. People I don't even recognize as having worked there at Fox News Channel. People behind the scenes, you know, makeup, hair, engineers. No mention of the Curtis and Ebony show.
You know what, Curtis? You're going to be in the next book. And it's going to be about
Madonna,
the Curtis Sliwa Pretty Power.
Oh, please, you know, I get headaches. Next guy for 2 hours, Michael Savage. It's 1 2-hour show in which he hawks whatever book he's written in the past, whatever book he's in the midst of writing,
whatever book he had
a wet dream about the night before that he wants to write. Then there's Mark Levin with his books. We should open up a library here at WABC.
Well, we have books stacked up around here. They're all over the place. I mean, that's certainly true, but... You know, a lot of people, Curtis, they were a little upset with me about my docket that I did Monday.
We can call it the Honorary John Batchelor Library, since he has more books than anybody else here.
Yeah, well, you know, my book is nice and pithy. You know, it's nice and light. This is a quick read, a quick 200 pages that would give you so much bang for your buck. That's what I really love about it. I am a witty, I think, and pithy commentator, and that's how I write. It really gives you everything you need very quickly. You can read this whole thing in 2 days.
Pithy, I have other words to describe you. And
pithy
is not one of them.
Oh, yeah?
If we can just go through the letter P, boy, there are enough words there to
How much
fill.
Time left in the show?
There are enough words there that a guy can hit you with.
Not enough. Apparently, according to our board ops, Brian, it's not enough.
And by the way, if somebody is interested in getting your writing, how can they go about appropriating it?
They can get it on pre-sale right now, pretty doggone cheap. Amazon's selling it on pre-sale discounted rate until September 12th, when it will be in brick-and-mortar stores. As you say, you will be doing double duty with the Rita Cosby event, Pubs and Politics.
All right, so you're having a book signing.
And the book signing.
Where is it taking place?
Upper East Side, Barnes & Noble, September 14th.
Oh, the Upper East Side.
It wasn't my call. Oh, my God. Here you go. But also, go, more importantly, pre-order it right now because it's like almost half price. BarnesandNobles.com, Amazon.com. Pretty powerful. And it's going to be deeper than a lot of people expect,
and if,
truly.
Folks come out to see you at the signing, which I've been told I have to be at.
You can't wait to be
or
there.
Or I'll be on the outside looking in.
You can't wait to be there.
What time will it be?
It's going to be 6:30 to 9:30. We're taking pictures. We're signing books. You will also be taking pictures. We'll be looking like the little bromance situation that we are. It's going
to
be cute.
So I have to be Fugazi that night. I have to fake it, right?
Yeah, we're going to fake it till we make it.
Like I really want
to
be there.
Can't wait to just put on your beret.
Oh, by the way, I have a comic book coming out on January 1st.
I will
Can
be
I start
there.
Talking about it now?
I will support that. I will support it.
It's
we'll
like
get you a write-up in the
like
post.
Premature ejaculation.
Oh,
I've got a comic book coming out on January 1st.
You've been waiting all show to talk about that. Oh, Lord.